Welcome to the Smart Thinking Podcast. I'm your host, Ted Neitzke. Today's episode is part of our bi-weekly podcast series of interviews. This episode's guest is State Superintendent of Schools, Tony Evers. An interesting fact is that this podcast was recorded earlier this summer, in the summer of 2017, in Madison at the Department of Public Instruction, which is located directly across the street from the state capitol. On the way home after the interview, I was listening to the radio and heard that there was an announcement in Madison that day that State Superintendent of Schools Tony Evers was taking out papers to run for governor. Unbeknownst to me, the entire time we were talking, he was sitting there in a suit preparing to make that announcement. So I was grateful that he took the time to talk with me and you to share his thoughts on public education, education in general, and for us to learn a little bit more about the man, Tony Evers, and the different ways in which he has grown over the course of his lifetime serving in the state of Wisconsin. And today I am in Madison with State Superintendent Dr. Tony Evers, who I have known for over a decade. And I'm excited that he was able to take some time to join us today as he is going into the start of the school year here in 2017. Tony is a Buffalo, somebody who I met years back, and my favorite story about Tony was one of the first times I had met him. We were in a policy meeting here in Madison. Dr. Evers walks in the room. They ask him kind of what he thinks, and it was the first time I had ever seen a state superintendent or an elected school official advocate with such passion for kids, then teachers, then school districts, and local autonomy. Tony is a strong advocate for funding formulas, for kids, for the future, works in industry, does anything, goes anywhere he needs to go in order to advocate for the kids of Wisconsin. So with that, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thanks, Ted. I'm blown away by your kindness.
So one of the pieces we do in the podcast here is we really try to work hard to get to know the different policymakers and elected officials in the state of Wisconsin. So tell us where you grew up. What was your family like, and what was like life as a kid?
The life as a kid was great. I grew up in the country. My father was a tuberculosis expert, and he was a physician. And back in the days when I was born, tuberculosis was still a huge problem in this country, and it's coming back, unfortunately. But anyway, my father was a physician. He was born and raised in Illinois, and a University of Illinois grad from medical school, and he ran a county institution in Sheboygan County, and so we lived right on the ground. So I was institutionalized right from the get go. So he ran the tuberculosis sanatorium, and he had met my mother, who was a nurse at nursing. She was in nursing school in Chicago. Met her, and they got married, and they spent part of their career in South Bend, in Indiana, Madison, Wisconsin, and Plymouth. And actually, my mother is a Kaukaunaite. She was born and raised there, and
a ghost.
Yeah, a galloping ghost.
Galloping ghost of Kaukauna.
Yeah, that's a great story too. And she went to Kaukauna High School, graduated from there. Both her parents passed away when she was still in high school, and so she was kind of on her own. And she had some physician in the community looking out for her. And he said, "Gene, you're going to nursing school," and essentially they sent her there. They paid for those are the days that everybody took care of everybody else. And so she went to, and actually her father was, my mother's father was a tugboat captain on Fox River. He pushed barges for the paper companies. And so, her history in the Fox Valley is long served. Anyway, so they arrived in Plymouth. My father ran Rocky Knoll Sanatorium from 1950. I was born in 51 till he retired in the early 70s, I'd say, so a long time. And our house was right on the grounds of Rocky Knoll Sanatorium. So I learned early on, and then after tuberculosis became less of an issue in this country, as most places, just about every county in the state had a tuberculosis sanatorium at that time. they morphed over into geriatric care. So he, at the end of his career, he was the physician, the only physician that took care of all the geriatric patients in this facility. Interesting way of doing it. I mean, essentially, there were no private physicians for these people. My father took care of all of them.
Yeah.
And so fascinating. My mother stayed home, raised three boys, and we were all kind of snotty kids. And so she needed all the time she could do it.
Where were you in the order?
I was youngest, and of course I was the most picked on and deprived.
Well, that'll explain why you're pretty resilient, guy.
Yeah, pretty resilient. That's why I learned to become a buffalo.
Yeah.
There's three boys. My eldest brother presently is retired. He's been all over the country. He's on the East Coast in Boston. My next brother lives in Portland, so I'm the only one that's stuck around. And he and his wife are professional demographers, and there's me. And born, so
just a lowly state superintendent.
That's a lowly state superintendent.
One of 50 in the country.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, and the one with the most seniority, with 8+ years.
And last year, if I remember, didn't you just finish the term as the president of the State School Chiefs Association or something?
Yeah, it was a great opportunity. I had a great time. We accomplished a lot, but the average is about 2 years now. For commissioners, so you can't, or state superintendents, you can't get much done in 2 years. Anyway,
that's a scary parallel to school district superintendents.
Absolutely,
not a long time.
Absolutely, and there's, I'm always interested in people say, "Oh my gosh, we're getting new blood in, and this change is going to be great." Well, yeah, that's true to an extent, but when it's everybody,
right?
It's just like, come on, we have to have some stability. So I went to kindergarten in Plymouth as a public school student. I actually met my wife there. We went to afternoon kindergarten at downtown Plymouth. And so I met her in kindergarten. We're both in our mid-60s, so we've known each other for about 60 years.
And this, you have a tradition coming up here in a couple of weeks in early August,
yes,
correct?
Yes, yes.
Share that with us.
State Fair. We're married for 45 years this summer, and I can't remember. I think when we dated prior to that. So at minimum, we've gone to the State Fair on the first Friday of the State Fair every year for got to be close to 50 years.
That's awesome.
Yeah, well, it's fun.
That's a lot of bacon on a stick.
And the reason I go, for sure, eating is an issue, but we spend most of our time in the barns watching kids show their animals. It's just amazing, whether they're pigs or whether they're Holsteins or whatever. It's one of those things you say, God, this is a good state. You sit back and watch these kids operate. Anyway, so I went to public kindergarten. Then I went to actually Catholic school for 8 years and graduated from St. John's in Plymouth and went to Plymouth High School. And by that time, I think most of my other two brothers were long gone. And so it was great. It's a great town. It's cheese capital of the world, in case you did not know that.
So home of Sargento and a variety of other.
Yes, Sargento and all the Sargento offspring companies. And also Sartori cheese is a Plymouth product. And I actually had I hated cheese until my junior year in high school when I worked for Borden's company. My job was to scrape the mold off it. And given that background, I really did start to, you'd scrape the mold off and then slice a little bit of good stuff for yourself. And I became a cheese addict after that. It was just amazing. So I spent time doing that. Actually, I started working at the sanatorium early on. I started out answering phones. I was a janitor there, all that kind of stuff during the summers. And so it's a good place to grow up. It's a good place to launch a career from. I still have lots of friends there, high schoolers that I graduated with that still live in the area. It's a great area. Chittenden County is really kind of a unique place. It's a blue-collar place, but it's also a place that cares about their kids, and it's good. I had a good life there.
Oh, I would totally agree with you. I started my teaching career in Random Lake, just to the south of Plymouth, and you're right, it's a great blend, but your area, the Plymouth and Sheboygan Falls, Sheboygan Kohler area there, great love of arts.
Yeah.
It's just a rich, rich part. And and if I remember, I didn't know the sanatorium part.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times driving up to Road America, my dad would say, oh, that's where people used to have to go if they had TB and they'd live in an iron lung. And now to know that your dad was working there, running the place, and you're probably raking it while,
absolutely.
All the Ferraris are driving by from Illinois.
Well, we never look forward to Road America weekend because it just completely destroyed life so we know it.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of, it's a quiet area.
Yeah.
Until all those cars show up. Every weekend, basically through summer.
Yeah, but it's I can remember this is getting gory, but we had one of our dogs die in a road on the road up here the weekend because she wandered out there and there's a million cars and she got zapped and there we go. So life goes on.
So growing up in Plymouth, going to Plymouth High School. What were your favorite topics and any lessons that you still remember or teachers or?
Yeah, I'll talk about the teacher and then the lesson because it's kind of one and the same actually. One of my favorite teachers was somebody that most people would consider not a favorite teacher. He's pretty strict, but his name was Dale Paskey. Dale Paskey was a U.S. history teacher, and he. I had him for U.S. I had him for a couple of courses, but U.S. history was one of them. And the thing I remember about him, and he's real strict and kind of content oriented and all that stuff. But what he taught me is this: I hope I can explain it well enough. When he'd be talking about facts and figures about World War or whatever event, and all dry as heck, and then he'd say, "But let's see what." And his favorite book was Canfield. Canfield is an author, U.S. history. You were a history teacher, weren't you?
I was.
Do you remember? Do you ever hear of Canfield?
I have.
Okay.
I have.
So let's see what Canfield says about those same events. And it was just amazing. You know, what you think, events, dates, people, pretty straightforward stuff. You take two different history books, and and it's great. You're actually viewing the world differently by the two different authors. And so he taught me to think like a historian. He taught me, he taught that lesson that carried over. You know, I was in the science, and so at the time, the U.S. history stuff didn't make all that much difference in my life. But the difference was he said you got to think like a historian. And he demonstrated that. And so that kind of carried over into different subject areas. And I will admit it right now, when I graduated from high school, I took that Canfield book with me without my friend Dale Paskey knowing about it because it meant so much to me. It was, it was an old cruddy book. And so I thought, oh, what the hell? I'll take it to UW with me.
Yeah.
But it was a great learning experience, but he was also a good teacher, that someone that kind of portrayed himself as the learned elder was actually imparting something besides history and dates and people.
And with that, talk us through then, what did you become? And you went into education?
Well, it was a windy road. I went to UW-Madison and graduated in 4 years. People could do that then. And
what's the time period?
69 to 73 during the Vietnam War stuff.
So really wild. It was all part of Madison.
All part of it, and that in and of itself, was a great learning experience. And I also worked throughout college. I spent time as a janitor, working at university hospitals. I was a janitor with another organization. And was a nursing assistant at a nursing home in Madison. That's now long gone. They tore it down. But so combining the good academic preparation and the work experience that I was having, and I'd live, after I left home, I left Plymouth, I was down here full time. And so that work experience with the UW experience was great. It helped me, I think, become a much better adult. And so I graduated with a degree in zoology. And my goal was to go to medical school. And actually, I was married. Kathy and I married when I was a junior in high school. She was working at St. She had moved to Madison. She worked at St. Mary's in Madison General Hospital, it was called back then. And so I married after the junior year, and then we were married for my senior year. Anyway, graduated with zoology, trying to go to
junior year of college.
Junior college, okay. Yes. Yeah. I met her in kindergarten. Yeah. Mary.
Yeah. You said junior year of high school. I thought, well, this story's getting better and better.
Yeah, no, we'll stop there. after my junior year in college, we got married. And back in Plymouth, had 650 people at our wedding and a live polka band. Yeehaw.
650 people.
And it was a hot August day, I'll tell you that. It was like people were perspiring like they couldn't stop. Anyway, we had a great time. And so I graduated with a degree in zoology. I had a 3.75 grade point average. And frankly, that just wasn't good enough at that time to get into medical school. And we were sitting at our apartment in Middleton at the time, figuring, okay, what in the world are we going to do? And lo and behold, I get this card at home towards the end of the school year saying, well, you were accepted to medical school in Graz, Austria. And what in the hell is this about? And all of a sudden, I guess I did apply there. And so we chatted for about an hour, and we said, what the heck? Let's do it. So we moved to Graz, Austria after I graduated. And Graz, Austria is not necessarily, it's the second largest city in Austria, but it's not necessarily on the tourism trail of Vienna, Salzburg, Innsbruck, those type of places. Beautiful city, though. Loved it. Was there a year, and a little less than a year, and it just didn't work out. Whole bunch of reasons. One is I knew no German before I went there, and it was in German, and I knew that going in. And so for me to go to a lecture and read all the things that I didn't read, it just took so long. It was just a long, complex, difficult process. I knew German well enough by the time I was really into it there, you know, to communicate and read, you know, in general. But here I was in medical school. It was a really tough sledding. And so, go figure, right?
I mean, I'm just going to stop you there for a second. That is probably the most buffalo behavior I've ever heard.
Yeah, that's right.
Ever of, let's, okay, hon, we're going to go to Germany, or Austria. Yeah. I don't speak German, and I probably have to learn Latin while I'm there as well.
Yeah.
A little zoology background probably helped. But
right. Yeah,
a gutsy move.
It was amazing. I mean, and we lived in a old apartment above a restaurant in the oldest part of Graz that had no central heat. And Graz gets cold. And so we not to talk about how we behaved in bed, but we took turns at night with our space heater. And one person would sleep the first half night, then we'd switch.
Rotate.
So that somebody else could stay warm. We went to bed with our coats on. It was extraordinary time, but we loved it. It was a good experience. Kathy became pregnant, and her comments was, no way in heck this child's going to be born in Graz. I'm going to be going back, and it was reasonable. But the main driver was, besides the difficulty, at that time the U.S. was getting very tough on foreign trained physicians. And I thought the last thing I want is to be graduating from Graz. It was a great school, but you know how the AMA works. You know, they clamp down on things. And the last thing I wanted was to be a good physician and not be able to practice here. And so I thought, okay, enough is enough. And I came home, and I had a job line, and this was over a short period of time, had a job lined up at Kohler. I was going to be shoveling garbage with a backhoe. That was my job. And the day before that happened, my mother said, geez, I forgot to tell you, you got this letter from UW-Madison. You've been accepted into pharmacy school and the graduate school of education. And I do remember applying to both of those, but I was a social justice person at that time, still am, and I thought the best way to kind of get at that issue that gnaws at me and continues to gnaw at me is to be a teacher. And so I went, we moved back to Madison, lived at Eagle Heights in graduate student housing. It was a great program. And I got a degree in a master's degree in CNI, and I was certified to be a any kind of science teacher except for physics at the high school level, secondary level. And it was a great program. I wish there, frankly, were more of them now because, you know, not that I was a second career teacher, but people kind of get to different places in their lives mm-hmm. in different ways. Mine was somewhat unusual. And we have to, so there's not many of those master degree programs anymore. I mean, it was solid education programs. And an aside, I also got a job at the Department of Public Instruction back then as a LTE. So I worked there in curriculum areas. I was going to school full time. Kathy was working full time. It was a great experience for a couple years. I did an internship, which I would absolutely encourage any. I know they're longer and they're more intense, and you don't get paid much. I interned at Bear Brook. It was a great experience. I taught biology at three classes and a study hall, and I coached football, and we lived in the community, and it was, you know, it's a full semester, and then hesitate to say this, but then the second semester I got a long-term subbing in industrial arts, as they call it, which I didn't know anything about. The kids taught me all sorts of things I never knew before. So I had a full year in Bearville. It was a wonderful experience. Kathy worked at the hospital. I worked at school. And then I went out looking for jobs, and I ended up in Tolma from there. So it was a great experience. I mean, really odd. But I think there's a lesson we learned there, too, is that, yes, it's great to look at engineers that might want to enter education or others that are second career. But there are a bunch of people just like me that they're being successful in college, but kind of different avenues towards getting into teaching, and we have to be cognizant of that. If I was in that position now and they didn't have that master's program and I had to go back and get a second bachelor's or something, there's no way. I mean, I couldn't afford it. I had my wife was working full-time. We had a child by then, and it just wouldn't have worked. So it's been an interesting haul, but that's how I got into it. And then I moved to Tolma and got a very interesting job. They didn't have a science job, so I was a teacher of gifted kids and on a K-12 basis, and did that for a couple of years. And again, they taught me more than I could ever have taught them.
Well, think of the qualities you brought to that classroom. I mean, I'm very blessed in my life. I still have contact and talk to students, former students all the time. But I always think that there's no right or wrong path into teaching.
Yeah, right.
But I believe that the high school educators who have taken these unique roads are, you know, student taught in Australia or mm-hmm. Do lots of service work, you know, as kids and, you know, or go to Austria for medical school. I think that just allows probably one of the finest qualities of educators to shine through, which is the relationships part, because I'm guessing kids wanted to hear about what was that like to live over there.
Yeah.
You know, you live where? Your dad worked on iron lungs all day?
That's right.
You scrape mold off of cheese?
Cheese, that's right.
I mean, that builds your character. I mean, I didn't know any of this stuff.
That's, well, it's been a fascinating life, I'll tell you that. And I just loved it, and you know, I've been fortunate to have, you know, 45 years this summer married to just this extraordinary rock of a person who keeps me sane.
Yeah,
she's retired, and Kathy is two yoga classes a day, 7 days a week she does now, and her whole focus is on keeping well physically and mentally, and she does it through yoga. It's just extraordinary.
Well, that's probably a subject for another podcast someday of what it's like to support people who are in the public eye.
Because,
you know, in the last two decades, it's become incredibly personal with social media. But and maybe that will be the topic of the next time we get together and talk.
That's right.
So one of the things I want you to think back to, though, as well, is grade school. So,
yeah.
You know, what teachers back then, who pops in your head there? What lessons, you know, really still stick with you?
That, it was interesting. There's two things that I remember specifically. And one, with great, some things were difficult. I mean, at that time, most of my teachers were nuns. And the comedies they have are all nuns and Catholic education. Most of them are true to an extent. I can remember, I'll give you one bad story about me, and I know people are going to be angry at me for even bringing this up, but sixth grade, there was a new archbishop in Milwaukee, and so all the kids that were able, probably not the littlest of kids, but all the kids in that school, probably from third grade on, wrote the new archbishop a letter of welcome. Well, there was a handful of me and my buddies who wrote, you know, St. John's isn't really a good place. The nuns are really mean. And oh my God, the proverbial, you know what, hit the fan. Because I can remember there it was like six of us that conspired around this. And we were called in the Sister Connor Dean's office one day, one at a time, and it was a brutal experience we were physically reminded of the incorrect things that we did in welcoming the new archbishop to Milwaukee.
Right.
So they were very mean. They were very, not mean, but their discipline was, in many cases, physical. And
expectations were high.
Expectations were high. And this is probably little known to anybody, but to this day, people can tell who graduated from an elementary school in the Archdiocese of Milwaukee, because they know how to diagram sentences better than anybody in the state of Wisconsin. And there's value to that. I'm not kidding. But we were really good at that. Really good at that.
So I didn't know we had this in common. I had the exact same thing. Kindergarten, public school, first through eighth grade, St. Mary's in Port Washington.
Did you learn how to diagram sentences?
Funny, if you want to have a contest right now where we throw out 3x5 cards with sentences and draw the lines and do everything.
Isn't that
absolutely
amazing?
You didn't have a choice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It was part of our DNA.
Yeah. But the irony of that is, I think the fun part of that story is now in your position.
Yeah.
You know, if you got a letter from a kid saying, hey, can you drive over to, you know, such and such elementary school and such a community and get us out of here?
Yeah,
get us out of here.
Yeah, just
like,
laugh.
This is great. Archbishop probably wasn't mad. He probably got a kick out of it.
Yeah. Well, one of the things, and this is rote memory, and so I don't want to necessarily support rote memory, but our seventh grade teacher was Mr. Miller, I believe his name was. He obviously wasn't a nun, but he was one of the lay teachers in the school. In order to get out of seventh grade, you had to be able to recite the Gettysburg Address without any prompts. Every kid in the class. And it worked. But to this day, I can still get like halfway through it.
Yeah.
Fourscore and 7 years ago, our forefathers brought forth on this continent a new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. The interesting thing, and then he goes on, but the interesting thing about memorizing that is some of the really important things that President Lincoln said that are true today, as it was back when I was in seventh grade or when he did that in Gettysburg. It's extraordinary. So it was one of those things that over time, because I can still recite almost all of it, that first part I use often. But even though it was rote memory, it was really important to me. And I'm guessing to most, you want to get out of seventh grade to eighth grade.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll bet you there's still some of those seventh graders that can still recite it and still has meaning for them. So that's something that
yeah, and ours was the preamble to the Constitution.
Yeah.
We the people in order, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I you know, when you said that, I had a little feeling boil up inside
yeah.
of me, because it reminded me that was really, really hard work to memorize.
Yeah.
But there was a tremendous amount of pride when you got to walk out for 10-minute recess because you had memorized
yeah.
it, and the three other guys who were still left
yeah.
were still in there
still
trying to struggle
sweating
through
it out.
But you had to do it.
Yeah. But it was good learning. It was something I still remember and use.
Well, that's a pretty good transition, because the next thing I want to talk about is education today. What do you see are the differences over the course of your career here? A kid in 2017.
Yeah.
You know, I started my teaching career 20 plus years ago.
You
were at the Gettysburg Address.
That's right. And this is cliche, and I'd be interested in your response too, but for the most part, kids are pretty much the same as they were back then. And you talked about relationships, and that is something that I feel very strongly about, that back then relationships were important, really important, and now they are. I mean, content's important. Golly, that's really important. Skills are important. But as we're learning through, as watching the pendulum swing, how important relationships are. And kids, I think, today are different, and they bring an extraordinary amount of baggage that kids didn't back then. Extraordinary amount. But then in turn, I'll use this as a small example, and I know I'm probably using up more time than you want, but I remember when I was doing an internship, and this young lady, she wrote me a letter like 10 years later telling me how important something I said to her at that time. She was hugely pregnant, and I was teaching biology, and she came up to the front. She had a question, and I said something to her that resonated, and she wrote back how important it was for me to say that to her at that point in time. And which is one of those scary things I think all teachers feel, is like, oh my God, people are actually listening to us and responding in ways that we probably don't recognize. But the difference back then that I was going to mention is that, you know, here, you know, today, someone, a young lady in that's pregnant, it's back then it was a scarlet letter. And now it's not, and some people might argue it should be. I wouldn't be one of those. But so there were things that kids carried last, 100 years ago that were really difficult, that we have now made it less burdensome on them. But in turn, there's lots of baggage. I mean, the poverty in the state is extraordinary, and we now know, and I think we always knew, that poverty creates trauma, and it's up to us as educators to try to overcome that. We can't do it all ourselves, but we have to understand that. So I think kids really need that relationship building, and with adults, with any adults. That's why, again, I'm going to digress. If you haven't noticed, I do that a lot. Some of the most successful kids I see are kids that are in the FFAs of the world and the FBLAs of the world and all those kind of the career and technical education student organizations. And it's not that they're if you ever go to one of their state events or national events, it's like at a rock concert. It's just like noise and everybody's happy. But what happens is those kids become really good adults because they have a multitude of good adults surrounding them all the time, whether it's in competition, whether it's doing their projects in the community, whatever. And so that need is more, that is a greater need now than ever before for our kids, just because of things outside of our control. Can I say that it's significantly different because kids, when I first started in education, you know, the technology, you know, we had opaque projectors, for gosh sakes. Now, you know, what's going on in our schools, in our community, technology, that's all changed, and that's for the better. We have to figure out how to harness it a little better, I think. But the kind of core is still there. You know, they're kids, they need help, they look up to adults, and adults need to find ways to build positive relationships with them.
Yeah, and that's a really good point, because I think, you know, Model UN and mock trials saved my life when I was in high school, right? So John Tauscher and Jim Pauley and Joanne Stade. I mean, I can name every adult that was there.
Right.
And I think the more of those positive role models in their life. But I want to go back to something you said, because whenever I mentor or train or work with new teachers, one of the things I always say is, please remember that every night at some dinner table in your community, they are talking about you.
Yeah, yeah.
And not, it can be good, bad, indifferent.
Right.
But words have power in the classroom.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So what did you say to her?
I said, you have courage.
Good for you. And at a time where, you know, she should have been on a bus going to South Dakota to live with
absolutely.
Her grandma.
Absolutely. She said, I was out of sorts physically. I was out of sorts mentally. I didn't like the place I was in life. And I was waddling up to the desk during, we were doing an experiment to ask you a question. It was the first time I've been out of my seat in months. And I said, you had courage. And I appreciate that. And so she remembered that 10 years later.
Yeah,
it's one of those things, and I bet you almost every teacher in the state has this. You know, somebody sends you something, communicates many years out, and you say that because you need a constant reminder that what you're saying to kids. And it's the same right now when I'm state superintendent, when I go visit, they're careful that what I say is appropriate, thoughtful, kind, and because people are going to remember it.
Well, and I had a great, I'm going to digress.
Yeah.
And there is no time limit.
Okay.
So as long as people will listen, we can talk about it. When I was walking you through an elementary school, probably 4 or 5 years ago, you had pulled, it's just one of those character pieces about you. And again, you won't remember, but we do. You walked up to the teacher, and it was after kind of a difficult time in the state of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And you just asked them, you know, like, how's this really working for you?
Yeah.
And are you okay? And what do you, well, power of words.
Yeah.
You know, she pulled me aside. She emailed me and asked, can you come back over? I want to talk to you about the visit from the state superintendent.
Yeah.
And it was one of those like, oh man, did I say something or what happened? And you know, I go right to worst case scenario like everybody does.
Everybody does.
And her and I start having a conversation. She's like, I just want you to know he was very humble and kind. And I've told everybody that he like really cares.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of those pieces of educators where everyone forgets. You didn't get in this business. You started. I got in this business because I was socially justice minded and I figured I could do more of this than being a pharmacist.
Yeah.
And I got into it because I just love kids and history.
Yeah.
And no one got in it for cash. No one got in it for credit or awards. And frankly, some of those people might be a mismatch for this profession.
Yeah.
But the power of words is something, you know, we can never underestimate.
Yeah, and being caring and thoughtful is hard work. People need to recognize how hard it is to be caring and thoughtful all the time. And teachers do it. I mean, I have great empathy in that. I remember when I was at your former district and I talked to a bunch of teachers that I talked about empathy a lot because I think that is a skill set that people can learn, but I'd say the vast majority of our teachers get it, that empathy is hugely important.
It is, I believe, the single greatest quality of a leader, to be able to look across the table, not with sympathy, not feeling sorry for somebody,
right,
but like, where are you at?
Yeah.
And again, you empathize with that young lady in your class, you have courage.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we all put ourselves in that kid's position, like, how is she doing this?
Yeah, I know. It's like, but that empathy thing plays out, too, in the achievement gap we have in Wisconsin and in this country. It's not that people aren't necessarily empathetic with kids in their classroom that maybe not don't look like them, but it takes that extra effort to understand where kids are coming from. I heard a great comment. I was at a meeting in Washington a couple days ago, and African-American woman who was talking about, again, I'm going to way digress, her research is on how many the kids are being expelled and suspended from early childhood programs and even infant programs. And they're disproportionately, I mean, African-American kids of color. And she was an African-American woman who was doing research on this. And she was able to talk about how things in her culture, and the audience was predominantly white. And she used some very specific examples of how not understanding others' cultures, and she used some good examples of black culture that just isn't part of generally white culture. And it was good. Then she flipped it around, talked about something that a white woman in her neighborhood said that just, it was just like, I really don't know what she was saying. She was talking about how blue eyes, the woman, it was a, she lived on a cul-de-sac, and most of the other women on the cul-de-sac were white, and one of them had just had a baby, and they're all kind of ooing and aahing about the baby, and the woman, the white woman said, you know, I think she's going to keep her blue eyes, because, as you know, in our culture and our race, eye color changes as kids mm-hmm. grow up. And this African American woman, the woman who's giving the speech, had never heard that before. Never. So she went home and talked to her husband. She said, I can't believe Denise next door, they're going to do something to that baby about that white, the color of their eyes, and they're going to be taking her to the doctor. And it was just the simplest thing. But unless you take the time to understand people's differences, it's going to be a hard sledding thing. But it's a great example. Something as simple as that threw her into a tizzy about her neighbor doing something to her baby.
Right.
God.
Right. What she could run with it and
yeah.
and chose not to, but try yeah, to understand it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's fun.
So where do you see kids in 5 years in the state of Wisconsin? So yeah. I always use 5 years because that is a kindergartner at the end of sixth grade. That yeah. is a fifth grader in high school. That is an eighth grader graduated from high school. So,
yeah.
you know, I have a seventh grade daughter and I have a sophomore in high school. You know, yeah. Tony, and you're steering the ship. What's their future?
I think the future is great. First of all, we need a whole bunch of teachers that we don't have that we're going to need. So any one of them can enter the profession. I'd help them personally to make that happen. But I think the future is bright in Wisconsin. We have good, caring teachers and superintendents and principals. And I get flummoxed every once in a while, things legislators do to kind of make lives more complex for teachers and school districts. But that aside, I think we have a great education system, K through 12. I think anybody that graduates from our system has a plethora of opportunities. And I'd say the nice thing that has happened over the last 8 years, and I won't take credit for it, but I've seen a change, is the idea that people, once they graduate from our high schools, have multiple pathways. And before it was like, go to college or you're a failure, which, you know, I went to college. I was glad I did, a four-year college. But we've kind of moved beyond that. And that's what I like about the direction of education in the state, is that multiple pathways could go, and you could do a career in the armed services right out of high school. You could actually go to work right out of high school. We have good enough preparation programs there. Technical college, four-year college, and all of those are worthy endeavors. And I think that's been it's been a huge change in our state and in our nation. I know there's a push to make sure that kids are college and career ready, but that means multiple pathways. And I think that's great. My youngest daughter went through that multiple pathway. She went to college, didn't work out, went to technical college, got a great job. Her great job paid for her to go to get a four-year degree. You know, all that in a matter of, you know, a decade or so, but she was gainfully employed the whole time. She's now in a good position to move forward. And so pathways are open to kids that probably kids didn't know before. And I think you know, our business community has really done a good job in helping us make that shift. Educators are on board. So I think having those multiple pathways is a really great transition. The transition between secondary in life is much more appropriate now than ever before.
So my last question for you is this. So we just had a little family Nagy yeah. trip, and we were blessed. We went through a few states in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you're meeting with the state school chiefs, you hear all kinds of stuff. And
yeah.
I'm really proud when I travel of where I'm from and what we have. And I, you know, all problems are local. So you'll hear, we don't have enough money, we don't have enough of this, we could do better at this, or you hear criticism that our schools aren't good enough.
Right.
And then when I travel, you know, I'm just kind of a school nerd. I'll go look at an elementary school. And I did it in Colorado. I've done it in California. I've done it in Florida. I'm very blessed with my ability to be around in different places. We have pretty good problems.
Yeah.
And you know, I was in front of we were in Berkeley with Berkeley, California, and right up front of this public school, there looked like a United Way kind of thermometer where it was help us raise funds for next year's budget. And they had to privately raise money to keep their public school open.
Right.
So where do you see us in that whole realm with Wisconsin? And when you're with the state school chiefs, what are you glad we face or don't face?
Well, what I'm glad is that many of my colleagues view people like you and other administrators or school people in general, as the enemy.
Oh.
Nice, right?
No.
So that, when I go there, I think, oh my Lord, things are really good in Wisconsin. But yeah, I think we have this can-do attitude here, and even though we have extraordinary achievement gaps in the state, but we have some extraordinary successes, and let me just tell you one. The graduation rate for Native Americans, American Indians, went from like low 70s to high 80s in a span of 6 years. It's huge. I mean, they're not great numbers, but it's huge. And so that's a success story. We can do that with other kids of color. I know we can. We can do that with kids in poverty. It's around some really significant, I think, investments, but also can-do attitude, make sure that we can diversify the workforce, that, you know, we have extraordinary problems, but I can honestly say, even with people that I fundamentally disagree with politically or with the way they want to solve problems, at least we're thinking about it in terms of how can we do this together. I think we're still in a pretty good place in this state. I know Republican, Democrat, it looks like, but the fact of the matter is public education has been able to thread that needle. Over the last 3 general elections, 1 million people in the state have voted to increase taxes on themselves to make sure that their local schools remain strong. Does that say something about the state's efforts on that? Yes. But more importantly to me, that message is people, whether they're half of those people, I'm sure, voted for Donald Trump. Half of those 1 million people. They had to have. They're, because these referendums are passing all over the state. It's not sustainable, but what tells me is that public education is a true nonpartisan or bipartisan issue. And that's great. That, I think, is something that kind of sets us up above many other states.
And I think you're right. I think where Wisconsin is unique is that I feel, in my career, most people are trying to help public education and education in general, where when I travel or I read other places, they're trying to fix.
Yeah.
And I think we've got a unique mindset here. And again, 300 people have 300 different sets of optics on the situation. But
yeah, I'd rather be called a Pollyanna than a jackass. You know? So I'm pro-education. I'm pro-kids. We're headed in the right direction. Have all sorts of problems we need to solve, but we're working together to do it. It's great.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Dr. Evers, for joining the Smart Thinking Podcast.
Thank you, Ted.
Enjoy State Fair and your traditions, and good luck to your endeavors in the future.
Thanks. Appreciate it, Ted.
Thank you for joining us.
You bet.
That's it. That's the Smart Thinking Podcast. Thanks for joining me for this interview with Tony Evers, the State Superintendent of Schools in the state of Wisconsin. And as you head out, 2 reflective questions for you. First, do you have the resilience and tenacity to stand up for what you believe in the ways that Tony talked about or has for the children in the state of Wisconsin? And second, if you were to aspire to a state-level position, a constitutional office, which one would you go for? Just think about it. As always, please feel free to share this on your social media platform. Forward it to friends or other people who might be interested in learning more about public education and the thought process of our state superintendent. And finally, and as always, I want to thank the Well Pennies for the great music they provide for me for the intro and closing of the Smart Thinking Podcast. Have a great week.
There's a song horizon, just you wait and see. Won't you take my